Welcome back to the Green Front, where I try to bring you a variety of stories on the Green Front, so much from the world of politics, science, activism, authors, and there's very few green stories that I haven't covered over the 15 years I've been on this beat, long before it was popular, if it is, to cover environmental issues, especially environmental health issues that do impact all of us, do have huge consequences, and yet are continued to be ignored for the most part by mainstream media. At least you can find all this progressive great stuff on the web, in particular at PRN and on shows like The Green Front. It sounds like there's lots of other environmental themed shows on the network as well, which is terrific. I wish I had time to listen to them all. But one story I have not done, and I have done a story on greener dying, but nothing on greener birthing. So I'm thrilled to welcome to The Green Front my new friend, Molly Arthur, also from the very green county of Marin here in the Bay Area. That's where there's a lot of interesting things going on. A lot of trends begin here, hopefully spread across the nation, if not the world. And this does seem to be a global movement. Welcome to the program, Molly.
All right. Thank you so much, Betsy. Great to be here.
So deep womb ecology, what's that?
Well, EcoBirth is really a philosophy, and I hope an organization that will enable many of us to change the world to a better place for our children and grandchildren. But deep womb ecology would be, you know, understanding that we are embodying what is being done to the earth, and literally in our bodies when we are birthing our children, we are pre-polluting them at this point. And that struck me as not right for how I would want to give an inheritance to my children. And, you know, there's been studies, the environmental health movement really is growing, and it's so important for us to realize that our actions and what we're doing is so important. But within the philosophy of understanding that everything that we do is connected, we are interdependent, we are interconnected, and when we're pulling out the resources and depleting them and turning them into poisons, we are actually ingesting those. And when we're carrying our children, there are hormone disruptions that can happen that can literally affect their health. And so my endeavor is to invite everyone to take a look at that transformational act that we all share, birth, and understand that, you know, in honoring and respecting that act would enable us to understand we should have clean bodies and we should have a clean world so that we can have a safe and beautiful world for our children to grow up in.
Absolutely. And let's take the worldview to start. I'm on your website, and you're showing that the U.S. is not among the five safest places to have a baby, and yet we so grossly outspend other countries in terms of what we're spending on health care. Of course, that's a real dysfunctional system, and reform has not helped, at least not helped my insurance premiums. So what's wrong with this picture? What are we doing wrong here?
Well, we're looking at a profit motive rather than well-being of human beings and kin. So in the birthing process, it's in the United States, been one that has been influenced by, I'd say, two things. Number one, women would rather not have pain in their birthing and in their lives. You know, we have a pharmaceutical influence in our lives today that we think it can be fixed by pills or by drugs. And actually, the implications of that are just being more clearer in our realization. And in my mind, the birthing with drugs is similarly to ingesting chemicals involuntarily from the air and from our water and from the soil and from the foods that we have. And yet, you know, we ingest the drugs on a voluntary basis without truly knowing the implications it may have on us and on our children. So for me, it's a way of looking at all the natural processes that are being interrupted and being adulterated in a manner. And so much of that motivation is not only a consciousness to avoid pain, but also institutions and a system that says, you know, this is for our convenience, and ultimately these actions should be done because it will enable us to maintain our living and to make money from doing so. So we ultimately are in an industrial influence, even in our hospitals.
And let's stay with the global for just a moment before mm-hmm. we build down, so to speak, on sort of the personal and health repercussions.
Yeah.
I see here on your site, Iceland, number one in terms of safest countries to give birth. Number two, Sweden. That's not so surprising. Three, Slovakia. No. And then fourth, Austria. And fifth, Spain. I mean, Iceland, didn't they even go bankrupt in the last year or two? So it doesn't seem to be connected to money necessarily.
Well, it's not connected to a system that works when you think you just need to make money. And you ignore the well-being of your citizens, you have a skewed environment and a skewed system for functioning well. And that kind of system would have a capability of going bankrupt and defunct. And that's what's happening, I think, across the world at this point, is thinking that money is the answer and thinking that profit is what we need. That is not what we need. As a world.
And since Norway, Finland, and Iceland are up there with Sweden, what do the Scandinavians know that we don't?
Well, they know that women are important.
Gee, what a concept. You think?
Right. So actually, the quality of life indicators in those countries show that women have more political power and more political position, midwives are actually available for birthing. But mostly it's tied into a more equitable society that looks at the well-being of the citizen rather than the profit of the industry.
And we are outspending Sweden. Let's see, you have about, we're spending about 31%, we're Sweden 10%. I assume that's on healthcare related
right.
childbirth costs.
Right.
So what can, since we are, we think, in at least some aspects, you know, in the forefront of the environmental health movement as a movement, or at least mm-hmm. a lot of trends are starting here, or at least, you know, as far as this side of the ocean, where, you know, we think of ourselves as trendsetters environmentally, but we're really not in so many aspects. Germany is certainly way ahead of us in terms of many environmental trends. But what can we do here in this country to take these, you know, these facts and really implement them in a new way, tapping into the environmental health movement that I hope is taking hold in this country? Sometimes it seems like it's going in fits and starts.
Right. Well, it is growing, and it's ironic to me that it's not mainstream at this point. And, you know, what interests me is to talk to women and say, you know, let's use our fierce protectiveness that we have for our children to change areas that are of particular interest to ourselves individually.
I like that.
Excuse me.
Fierce protectiveness. I like that. We're mother hens. You're a mother. You're a grandmother. We do anything for our kids, give them the best possible health care that we can afford, best educations, and yet we're not looking at those connections that have to do with nurturing, you know, our planet so that it may provide for us and
right.
future generations.
Right. So, you know, it's important to understand that how we've structured and how we live is creating toxins and poisons that are an effect of the environmental influences that we're doing right now. Excuse me.
Let's while you're clearing your throat, let's yeah. talk about, you know, thing we've been talking about, the planetary level and the personal we're touching on. Let's talk about at the placenta level. What is coming along with baby's delivery in terms of exposure to toxins before a baby is even born?
Well, we ingest when we eat food with hormone growth providers in our meat, when we drink water that has arsenic and chlorine in it, when we put perfume on our bodies that have phthalates in them, and if the label says perfume, it does have phthalates, then these are not protected by the placenta. The placenta is not a barrier. That was initially thought that it may have been. But now it is the perfect organ that allows the mother's body to feed and help the baby grow. For instance, if there was a hormone disruption, let's say, from a phthalate from perfume, so if you use a lot of perfume and you have a lot of phthalates in your shower curtain, we could talk, you know, a lot about the different ways that these toxins get into your body. But if something happens in the first trimester that is a fairly large hormone disruption, that can affect the growth of your baby like it did actually for my sister. My sister was born with a defect. She was missing her left hip bone socket. And that could have been a disruption literally between the weeks of 18 weeks to 22 weeks of gestation during her formation in my mother's body. And on any given day, that kind of disruption, and I know that my mother used Chanel No. 5 from her adolescence on through her entire life, and in that is a phthalate that is a poison.
Funny, they don't advertise that in those beautiful ads.
Right. You know, and it's the most popular perfume in the world. And initially it was created as a synthetic chemical. That's what Coco Chanel wanted it to be. She wants it to be like, you know, not something natural. And the phthalates are in the perfume because it is a plastic. It's a plasticizer that allows the smell of the perfume to stay on your skin longer, so that it smells longer. But it goes through your skin and into your body, and when you're pregnant, you know, can affect your baby. So what we find out is that all the kinds of environment that we have is affecting our health. And it's not just our health. It's our children and our grandchildren. And if we think about it, you know, when my mother was being gestated in my grandmother's body, my eggs, I was in my mother's body.
Mm.
So these are we're talking about two generations of effect that happened. So then I started thinking about, well, what was happening during my mother's gestation in 1912? And we're raised specifically here in San Francisco. I'm a sixth-generation San Franciscan. What is it that may have been influencing my mother and therefore me? And, you know, I thought about the specific San Francisco mercury from the gold mines that are still in the water. Hmm. I thought about the lead paint that's in all the Victorian houses here in San Francisco. I grew up in one of them. And you know,
and what is your lead level? Have you had yourself checked for metal contamination?
No, I haven't. You know, but
I have, and I'm high in lead, high in cadmium, and yeah, it's quite frightening. And I grew up in the Bay Area as well, where there's very little industry. I don't know if there was lead paint in any of the homes I grew up in, but certainly nothing
you
that I've lived in.
You presume that there were, because they didn't ban the lead paint until 1970 in the United States, while in Europe. You know, and this might be one of the reasons why they're healthier people. They banned, the League of Nations banned interior lead paint because they knew it was poisonous. And so we are dealing with this lead still now in our homes.
And it doesn't leave your body unless you go through some chelation methods, and I'm undergoing that treatment now. We'll see how successful it is. But it's also, lead is also in our lipstick. It's in our cosmetics. And I always thought I was so clever to, you know, save money and time on blush, and I would put my lipstick on, and then I'd put a little smudge on my lips, on my cheeks, sorry, as well as my lips. And now we're finding out there's a lot of lead in that. And considering that's going directly into my skin, I'm not really saving. Yeah, not worth whatever money and time I was saving by using lipstick as blush or even using lipstick with lead in it. Are they still making cosmetics with lead in it, do you know?
Yes. Yes, they are. And, you know, and there's been the Safe Cosmetics campaign that's under the auspices of the Breast Cancer Fund. It's been very successful, and the campaign has been asking manufacturers to, at minimum, follow the product production that they do for the European market.
Yes.
I mean, they're making two different products. in Europe that's safer, and not in the United States. Not in the
United
States.
Exactly. They were doing that with computers back a couple of decades ago. HP was making recycle-friendly computers designed for disassembly for Europeans because there was a mandate and no such thing in their own backyard because we Americans don't demand it because we don't know or don't want to know. And yes, Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, that also has Marin County roots and very important campaign, and I have been covering that one. But again, EcoBirth, that's new to me. So let's go back to that. You know, there's a lot of concern about, you know, the mercury in a mother's womb. I think, what is it, one out of six babies have been exposed to it. Is that the figure that Robert Kennedy Jr. cites quite a bit?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I couldn't tell you.
I believe
so. Put myself as an expert on this. I'm more in looking at, you know, as a consumer, as a regular human being here in the world, what is it that happened during the 30 years that I was raising my children? You know, I have two that are 26 and 30, and I wasn't paying attention very well about the growth of this potential toxins that were being passed on by me and were growing exponentially in the world in which, you know, I was raising my family. And I thought I was doing a great job raising good children, productive human beings, until I looked up and looked around and said, well, what kind of world are they going to bring my grandchildren into?
And what kind of chemicals are they passing along in breastfeeding, which is the most pure, should be the most pure, unadulterated, you know, natural endeavor imaginable known to womankind. And I'm glad that I was ignorant, that I didn't know, you know, 17 years ago when I was nursing my daughter, that I was passing along chemicals to her. It would have completely, you know, first of all, perplexed me in terms of what to do about that dilemma had I known, and secondly, would have taken away the pleasure involved in just having that attachment to your love of your life. And yet we know now, you know, you didn't know, I didn't know, but we know more now, and yet what's being done?
Right. And so I would say that the first step that I got to was accepting the responsibility for that happening on my watch, because there's no denial of it. And what I want to do now is to name it and make it clear in the public that this is what's happening, and it's not pretty to listen to. It's not feeling safe, but it is important for us to grasp what really is happening in our world so that then we can take the steps to change it. I take as my role not only the responsibility to understand what happened during my watch, but to also hold the capability of the change and the love and connection that I have with my children and grandchildren to say, I don't really know the answers for you. You know, I don't necessarily, I think that so many of these, this is such a dilemma for us in the world that, you know, we created these problems, but we don't necessarily have the answers. We need to make the steps to enable it and to expose it, but to enable the next generations to take the steps, to take those changes, to improve the world. And so that's kind of where I put EcoBirth is. We want to realize where we are. We want to understand that we have a responsibility to all our fellow kin and to our earth and to our family and relatives, to everyone here, because we are so intimately connected. And, you know, we have all been birthed from each other. You know, the only way we're here is that we were freely given our life by our mother, and so the maternal motivation is what I see as a model of compassion and mercy, and understanding that we are connected all the way back to the very first life force that was the bang that created life here on the earth. It's in our bodies, so that we, you know, embody this. And what is the responsibility? The responsibility is to be conscious and understand that we should take steps to change this. And, you know, I guess I would look at birth as an honorable
place to start.
Right.
Good place to start.
Exactly.
Last week I had Kathleen Dean Moore on, and she is a co-editor of a fabulous book called Moral Ground, Ethical Action for a Planet in Peril, and talking about the morality of not dealing with our pressing ecological challenges, predominantly in this anthology, climate change. And you and I met at one of my green tea parties, and I talk about what's going on with climate and talk about, you know, people are aware that we're at 390 parts per million of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and scientists say we should be at 350. But I also talk about how the average baby is born with exposure to over 200 toxic chemicals. So if you're not kind of keying in on the planetary level, just look at the personal level. And if those two numbers and where we're at don't alarm people, I don't think anything will.
Right. You know, and it's important for us to be empowered to feel that we have the agency with which to change things. I mean, the first step can be, what kind of birth do I want to have? And what kind of legacy do I want to enable my child to have? And to understand that that how you do birth your child is an important aspect of the environmental, of the child's health. There is quite a bit of research out now that shows that there's a direct correlation with children's asthma and cesarean section.
Really? I had not heard that.
Yeah, it's fairly new.
And I had just said yes to drugs when I had my daughter. I wasn't green yet, and I, you know, was fully aware and present, but perhaps I did something that I might not have done in getting an epidural. And what is EcoBirth's position on that? Do you think there's any reason to think that that could be dangerous for a child, if certainly more comfortable for the mother?
Yes, I think there are implications for taking opiate drugs or taking drugs. And there's a specific research out of Sweden that shows if opiate drugs are taken within 10 hours before birth, there is a correlation with adult drug addiction.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, well, so far so good.
Right.
She's only a teenager, but so far so good.
That is one.
Sorry.
You know, and that's the hard part. That is the hard part, is talking about this truthfully. It is very personal, because it's your body, and it's your children, it's your lineage and your legacy, it's your life, you know, and how, so, you know, I grapple with that for EcoBirth. How do we talk about this so that it is important that we feel hopeful? And I'll tell you, one way I look at that is to understand that if we understand how we are connected immutably to our mother, our grandmother, all the way through to life, and that we are interdependent, that we can better understand where we fit in this world and how important it is that we feel a part of this large tribe of human beings, and that it's okay who we are, and it's okay that we fit correctly, and therefore we have a responsibility for all of us together. And I think that's tremendously hopeful. And I think that, you know, clearly understanding our relationship and our connection answers a lot of the yearning that we have in this world of emptiness and disconnection. You know, so that would be the way I'd say it's hopeful, is yes, you know, I am really connected to my mother and to my children, and this is the pivotal relationship in my life, and I will understand that this enables me to know where I fit, and know where I am, and know the world with which I want to see them live.
Beautifully put, and I agree with you that building community is a good way to share this information and to build hope, but also spread awareness. I know you're involved with the Moms group, and we'll have Debbie Friedman on the show soon to talk about that group, which she co-founded, and you're involved with EcoBirth, and I'm doing green tea parties, so we green women in Marin are trying to do our part, aren't we?
We really are. We are. We just have to take the steps. We use our own gifts. And that's the first part, is actually to recognize your own capability, your own authentic self, and that's a part of seeing you in the lineage of maternal love, is that you have your own particular gift and use that for a good world.
Beautifully put. And as someone with a, you know, news media background, I became disillusioned, you know, about 15, 16 years ago with breaking news, and just wasn't quite making it. But people would always compliment me on my voice and, you know, loved hearing me on the radio. And I tried really hard to think about what I would do for about 5 minutes when I realized I detested waste and I had a kind of a latent green gene, decided to, you know, make that manifest. And boy, have I lived to regret that in a way, just in terms of career moves. truth, but all kidding aside, it's absolutely what I feel I was meant to do here. And thank you for the work you're doing, Molly Arthur.
You're so very welcome, and I appreciate your gift offering to the world, freely given.
Thank you so much, and hopefully it won't all be free forever, but we're trying to get Green Media to get supported by sponsors, because it should be. Why not? This is a, you know, this is such an important area, and it impacts so much, and it all starts with EcoBirth. So thank you for sharing your bit of wisdom, and the website's work is ecobirth.net. That does it for this edition of The Green Front. Hope you've enjoyed the show. If you came in part way, please go to either the PRN FM website, or also my shows are archived at thegreenfront.com. Tell your friends about this best-kept secret on the web, thegreenfront.com. See you next time.